Another fine pizza place, I'm sure.
Brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and Pizzeria Antica, which strives to provide Champaign-Urbana with an authentic Neapolitan pizza experience, preparing only fresh, all-natural, non-processed ingredients in wood-fired ovens. Taking pizza orders from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Phone 217-530-4137 and online at anticachampaign.com.
Welcome to CU Progressive News, bringing you the many voices of the Champaign-Urbana community. This program is produced in the studios of WEFT in beautiful downtown Champaign, Illinois. We are indebted to the members of WEFT who have for 35 years provided the infrastructure for independent media in Champaign-Urbana. CU Progressive News, the podcast, is sponsored by Phoenix Botanical. Phoenix Botanical was established by healthcare and business professionals to provide exceptional service and quality medicine to those that can benefit from medical cannabis. Located on Neal Street in Champaign, visit phoenixbotanical.net for more information.
On this week's CU Progressive News, we go over events from the weft.org/progressive calendar from March 12th through the 19th. We hear from Eric Jacobson on the recently passed resolution regarding how mental health will be addressed in Urbana. Dr. David Gill announces his bid for the U.S. House of Representatives in the 13th District. We hear from United Against Inequities in Disease about the work they plan to do on campus. We hear from the UIUC group Crescendo about supporting underrepresented populations in the arts and their upcoming bake sale fundraiser. And we hear about a t-shirt exchange program that happened last week on campus. We begin now with the Progressive Calendar.
For the CU Progressive Calendar, this is Sandra Otten. We're going to be covering events going from March 12th through March 19th. On March 12th, Challenging State Violence, Community Strategies and Tactics. This is an event sponsored by the Build Programs Not Jails folks. As the tide of an alt-right repression is on the rise, the new political landscape calls for those involved with social justice movements to come together. But what does that mean to build sustainable and intersectional solidarity across a wide spectrum of community groups? As an organization that focuses on state violence and Build Programs Not Jails would like to invite the many communities and organizations to join together for a critical discussion about the future of criminalization in the U.S. This event will examine how education, incarceration, borders, and alternatives to incarceration are increasingly impacted by heightened criminalization and state violence. In addition to the critical discussion and strategizing, the event will include performances by DJ Pillmore, Trey King, and Patricia Bradford. Together, they will all identify some concrete next steps in addressing this repression locally and nationally. See weft.org/PSA on March 12th for all information. There's going to be a town hall with Senator Scott Bennett and Representative Carol Ammons on Monday, March 13th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. They are both of the 103rd District. They're going to have their third joint town hall update on what's happening in the Illinois legislature, discussing legislation passed, budget status, and they'll be answering questions. That event is at the Carpenters Hall, 402 South Duncan Road in Champaign. All of these events will have more information links at weft.org/PSA or weft.org/progressive, which is where we house the Progressive Calendar. Hot Topics is going to be having a discussion about climate change and feminism. Hot Topics Dialogue is a series hosted by the Women's Resource Center and the YWCA on campus. And on the second and fourth Mondays of each month, they provide a space for dialogue on gender and other social identity issues and social justice. This one's on March 13th, Monday, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the University of Illinois Women's Resource Center. Well, this is an interesting event called an I Am Not a Quota Bake Sale. Crescendo, which is a group supporting underrepresented students in the School of Music and Arts, are organizing. They're an organization where social justice and music intersect, and they're having a fundraiser called I Am Not a Quota Bake Sale, co-sponsored by the YWCA, from 10 to 4, while supply lasts, on the quad, the main quad. The event is in response to Illinois Student Republicans' event called Affirmative Action Bake Sale, where goods will be priced on your race and ethnicity. If you're interested in donating, volunteering, or sponsoring this event, you can email them, and all the information is at the WEF.org/PSA site. An exciting event with an ecofeminism summit. The keynote speaker is LaDonna Brave Bull Allard. And she will be speaking Tuesday, March 14th from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Unit 1 Allen Hall at 1005 West Gregory. In honor of the 7th Annual Campus Ecofeminism Summit, join the Women's Resource Center together with co-sponsoring units for this keynote lecture by this Lakota historian and activist. In April 2016, she founded the first resistance camp of the Dakota Access Pipeline protest, Sacred Stones, aimed at halting the Dakota Access Pipeline near Standing Rock Indian Reservation in North Dakota. The lecture is going to be followed by a Q&A. Table Talks on Faith in Action at St. Andrew's Church takes place during Lent. You need not be a Christian or a member of St. Andrew's to participate. They're hosting a series of nonpartisan hands-on training for doing advocacy work to help the poor and vulnerable, following in the call for Christians to do justice and express their faith in activism and advocacy. They're hosting a discussion with local advocates, and on March 9th, I'm seeing who the speaker is there, and I'm not seeing it. March 16th, March 30th, Ricardo Diaz, CU Immigration Forum. April 6th, Patricia Avery, and I'm not sure who the speaker is this coming week, I think, but I will make sure that it gets on the WEF.org PSA website, so if you want to know, you can look at that. As usual, the Friday Forum will be held at the YMCA on campus on Friday, the 10th, at 12 noon. And this week, the speaker is going to be State Treasurer Mike Frericks talking about the state of the Illinois budget. And as usual, that will be replayed on WEFT Wednesday at 6 p.m. A night downtown for our nursing home, Champaign County Care, will be hosting a fundraising gala in downtown Champaign to support the efforts to engage voters about the referendum on the ballots on April 4th. Tickets will include two drinks and Jupiter's Food, DJ Mike Ingram, and lots of fun side events, including a silent auction from local artists, authors, and restaurants, and a 50-50 raffle. And the are also creating a board to remember family members who have stayed at the nursing home. All the money goes directly to the cause of supporting the Champaign County Nursing Home, and you can get educated about that by looking at the Champaign County Care Facebook page, which we will have a link to on our website. Manifesto, Inner Voices Social Theater presents Manifesto, a performance of intersectional feminist voices of inspiration and intervention in honor of Women's History Month. That is on Friday, March 17th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Channing Murray Association. I think that's what they call themselves. Channing Murray, anyway, on campus. Power of Poetry Workshop with Tasleem Jamila. Poet, performance artist, and author Tasmin Jamila presents Legacy, I Stand on Shoulders, an interactive workshop celebrating the power of poetry and spoken word. Taj, Tasmin Jamila goes by her AKA Taj, is an internationally renowned poet, vocalist, and cultural producer. Her sound is a fusion of hip-hop, spirituals, mystical chants, and lyrical soul. We tell our own stories, reclaim the power to write our own future, she says. We recognize ourselves in the stories and memories of others and are awakened to the unity in all of us. This workshop is focused and organized around poetry and spoken word as a means for social change and preserving our ancestors' stories. And that's going to be taking place at the Champaign Public Library on Saturday, March 18th from 2 to 4 p.m. We're looking forward to the next People's Agenda, where they're having the focus Be Heard, How To's of Powerful Constituent Communication. In this workshop, the first in the series on how to communicate with your elected officials, they're going to start with the basics and cover the foundation of effective communication and work through exercises together so you have material ready to go and have an impact on issues you care about when you leave. The topics covered will include figuring out your bottom line message, what exactly you're trying to say, letter to the editor, what people read and remember, talking to a reporter as a constituent, and talking to your elected officials. This training is tailored to those who are new to communicating with elected officials and the press. And that's going to be taking place on Sunday, March 19th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. For the CU Progressive Calendar, I'm Sandra Auten.
All right, so I'm talking to Eric Jacobson, who is a city council member with Urbana, and I'm Sandra Auten with CU Progressive News, and I was just reading about the fact that Urbana passed a resolution regarding mental health, and I was really interested in that and wondered, Eric, if you could fill us in on the details of it.
Sure. So the problem that we perceive is at the intersection between our criminal justice system and our mental health services. Many people come into contact with police, and an increasing fraction of the Urbana police calls are people whose problems are rooted in mental health, in schizophrenia, substance abuse, bipolar disorder. But we don't have the provision to ensure that those people are diagnosed and treated. And as a consequence, the problems multiply and the problems persist. And often, you know, the person may or may not be taken into custody. The person may or may not be actually convicted of a crime of some sort, may or may not be incarcerated. But what will not happen under the present circumstances is the person will not be treated, especially if they haven't been treated going into this event. So our goal is that when a person comes in contact with the police, whether it be, in our case, we have a particular concern about the Urbana police, but of course, there's got to be an interaction between the municipal police and the county authorities.
Right.
And whether municipal police are in Urbana or Champaign or Rantoul or any of the municipalities or villages in Champaign County. But what we want to see happen is that that person would be given an initial assessment and that there would be follow-up. No matter what else happens to the individual, there would be follow-up with respect to their mental health. Essentially, it's as simple as that. I mean, there's a whole bunch of whereases and therefores. The county is now implementing, the county has a grant in conjunction with mental health providers, has a grant to study how to do this. Mm-hmm. There are many questions about implementation. What our resolution says is that the city of Urbana will commit to doing its share, whatever that turns out to be, but will commit to doing its share, including dollars, if dollars are necessary, mm-hmm. to implementing a plan that's going to ensure that mental health services become available to anybody who comes in contact with the police.
Well, a couple of questions. So right back to the beginning, you said that you know, it does make common sense that the mental health and criminal justice are tied, and that we have this big increase in mental health issues at the police level. Do we have any information about that in terms of actual data about how?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And yes. So we have part of the background for this is that I looked at a chart, at an activity report from the Urbana Police Department. And so this was going from 2011 to 2016. And you could see the background of, you know, assaults and rapes and robberies and so on. Mm-hmm. And all of these were pretty flat. There were fluctuations from year to year, but not a big trend. There was only one area where there was a distinct upward trend. And this has to do with the mental health area. This has to do with people who come in contact with police because they're behaving erratically, they're passed out, they're just totally non-functional, mm-hmm. and somebody has called, made a call in, or they're behaving dangerously and non-functionally in the home, and somebody has called in. So sometimes the call-ins relate to behavior in a public place, sometimes the call-ins relate to behavior at home or in some, you know, other kind of structured setting. But
right.
But these calls have approximately doubled from 2011 to 2016, and steady upward trend. It's in contrast to every other category of police calls.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this really relates to decline in funding for community mental health.
Yeah.
So the people are not, their needs are not being dealt with otherwise. And so they're, you know, finally somebody calls the police because this person is a danger mm-hmm. to himself or to other people, or herself mm-hmm. or other people.
Right. Well, it could be that, and I guess it could be two things. It's either the decline in funding for community mental health or somehow a decline in efficiency of service providers, one of the two. I mean, not efficiency might not
sure.
be the right word, but either the effectiveness of service providers, one of those two things, and or maybe a cross-section.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, basically the people, there are two possibilities. People aren't getting the services they need, or I guess there could be actually an increase in the incidence of these problems in the population, but I think it's not, I doubt that it's the latter, because I think that this would be noticed nationwide if there actually was a big increase in mental health problems in the population. So I think it's probably, I don't know for sure, but I think it's probably not that.
Right. So it could be the decline in funding for community mental health. It could be an increase in incidence of mental health, which would tie in with the increase like in heroin addiction. That would be a possibility because there are some things that are escalating. And then it could be effectiveness of the mental health services that we have. Do we have services that we need? Do they match what we have? So, for instance, we don't have a detox center. It's been a long
right.
time since we've had a detox center. But in fact, we don't have one. So do we have the services that match the needs of that we have? We don't have the crisis drop-off center, which is one of the things that we've never had. But And do we have good psychiatric services? So we have psychiatrists. We have, you know, places that have psychiatrists. But do we have the psychiatrists that we need? So there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle for sure. But the good news is that Urbana has recognized that it is part of the issue. They've created this resolution that I take it, tell us how binding it is. What does it actually mean in terms of governmental, you know, jurisdiction or whatever?
What it means is that part of the resolution is that we are going to be consulting with the county, and we will join with them in planning, you know, in figuring out the implementation of what their current study suggests, and we will commit dollars in the coming year budget. If there are plans that involve, we haven't put at a precise dollar amount in there, but we have said that we're going to account for this in the budget in an appropriate way. So there isn't a precise dollar amount because we don't know at this moment what the appropriate dollars are. But,
So they got that $100,000 grant from the Department of Justice, from the DOJ, and they're studying that now. And then they expect to apply for a grant for implementation of that, and then that they will be asking various municipalities and perhaps institutions like Carl or et cetera, who might ever might benefit for having like their emergency room alleviated some of the problems with that kind of thing. So that's what I understand. That's what you understand too.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the implementation grant will be strengthened by matching local commitments.
Right, right.
And so that's just the way those things work. So we have said, yeah, we're going to make a commitment to this. And I'm sure part of making the commitment will be to challenge the city of Champaign to make a commitment. They are a little over twice the population that we have, so they should commit proportionately,
right?
And we'll be after them to do that. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, verbally, you know, and
right.
Nicely. I mean, not insultingly, but we'll pressure them.
Yeah, that should be the expectation for sure. Okay, well, thanks for talking to me today. I appreciate you taking that time out of your day.
Okay, thanks, Sandra. Thanks for your
interest. Thank you. All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. David Gill, an emergency medicine physician and former assistant director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, today, that is on, I think, the 8th of March, announced his candidacy for the Democratic nomination for the Illinois 13th Congressional District in 2018. So that is the seat that Rodney Davis now holds. Gill of Bloomington once ran before in Illinois 13. In 2012, he was defeated by U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, 46.5% to 46.2% in the second closest U.S. House race in the country that year. Independent John Hartman garnered 7.2% of the vote in that election. And Gill said, quote, "I've long maintained that Mr. Hartman's presence in that race caused the majority of voters in Illinois 13 to be misrepresented. Mr. Hartman echoed my views on all the important issues of the day, such as single-payer health care, campaign finance reform, and aggressive action against climate change. We won on those and many other issues, but because the vote was split just enough, Rodney Davis was able to go to Washington." Gill has long been at odds with the political elites of Washington, D.C., maintaining that their ties to Wall Street, quote, leave most Americans without proper representation when both major parties grovel at the heels of Wall Street, banks, and large multinational corporations. Virtually all of us suffer economic injustices. Gill attempted to run for Congress in 2016 as an independent, and his campaign collected more signatures than any other independent U.S. campaign House campaign in Illinois history, but it still wasn't enough to secure a place on the ballot. Gill says, quote, I've demonstrated that I have tremendous passion for improving the lives of all people. That passion drives my career in medicine, and it's what motivates me to become a leader in the House. Gill continued, I've made no secret of my differences with the Democratic Party leadership in the past, but the emergency we now face with the president, such as it is with Donald Trump, is a true threat to our republic, and our country needs members of Congress to stand up against Trump agenda, and I intend to do so. So this reporter is personally thrilled that Gill is running again. He has ran close races in the past, ran as an independent in the past, held his own against everybody he has ran against, and I really think perhaps he could do it this time if the progressives really get behind him. So good news for Illinois 13. For CU Progressive News, this is Sandra Auten.
You are listening to the weekly pre-recorded program, CU Progressive News. CU Progressive News is a collaborative effort. We are asking you to be a part of our collaboration. We need assistance for news readers, news gatherers, writers, researchers, fact checkers, calendar coordinator, and production assistants. Training will be provided, no experience is necessary. We also welcome stories. Whether you have an hour a week or an hour a month, we welcome your participation. Email weft90.1@gmail.com to give us feedback, story ideas, or to find out how you can be a part of CU Progressive News.
Anyways, so Nick, I understand you're here with United Against Inequities in Disease,
That's
but
right.
Let's get to know you a little bit. So you're a student at the U of I. What are you studying over there?
I'm studying biochemistry, and thanks for having me, Brian.
Yeah, yeah, no problem, no problem. So biochemistry, and it looks like you're also pursuing a volunteer position in the Peace Corps after your fall graduation. And so is the whole health aspect of the biochemistry realm, is that something that interests you? Is that how you kind of got involved in all
absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. So I really like the intricacies of how bodies work and how biology works. So that's what got me into biochemistry coming out of high school. But biochemistry typically at this university is a more post-graduation undergraduate.
Okay.
So you go on to grad school and pursue a PhD in something. But I'm not quite sure what I want to pursue my PhD in yet. So going to the Peace Corps, getting a two-year program, and really getting inspired to see what an underrepresented population needs to be researched instead of, you know, what pharmaceutical company can pay you the most.
Sure, sure. And so I got a little email from you, kind of just getting to know you a little bit. You said that you were fascinated with the intimacies of the physical universe and driven to prove deterministic causation. I don't even know what any of that means. You want to kind of dive into what you're fascinated about there?
It's basically just physics jargon, but you know, a lot of things are determined probabilistic. So if you don't know, if you can't measure a system well enough, then you say it has a certain probability to behave a certain way. But I'm a big advocate of Einstein, and Einstein has a famous quote saying, God doesn't simply roll the dice. And I stand by that. I think that everything has a reason. And that's what deterministic causation is. Something happens because something else made it happen.
Okay. And does that tie into what you do, or what United Against Inequities and Diseases or in Disease does? Is there kind of a cause that you think for all the inequity that we see out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that, you know, there's always motivations to have systems designed the way they are. And sometimes those systems are designed unfairly. And the difference between inequality and inequity is that inequality is something that's unfair by nature, but inequity is something that's unfair, but it can be fixed. And that's what we're really going for. So United Against Inequities and Diseases was founded by our president, Sterling Brooks. And he really got inspired from an anthropologist and philanthropist named Paul Farmer. Paul Farmer was a physician that went to Haiti and made sure that everyone got suitable health care and got the health care that they needed. And he really did that, you know, on his own back. And he found this organization, fortunately, had been discontinued at this campus, but the motto is, it starts with me. You know, one person can really make a change.
And so is that the goal against United Against Inequities and Disease, is to try to get adequate health care to everyone out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to make sure that everyone gets the health care that they deserve. And we do that through education and action.
Okay, and what would be some examples of some of that? I know that you guys are a newer organization, but what are some of the actions that can be taken to help?
Yeah, so almost every week we have someone come in to a room we reserve and talk about public health care or women's health care, childhood obesity, and, you know, kind of brainstorm ways that we can fix these inequities and, you know, help the community and advocate change.
And are these talks, are they open to the public? Or are they just for the group?
Yeah. We're advertising the best we can. You know, we're a new organization, but we encourage everyone and anyone to come.
Cool. Yeah. So this is United Against Inequities and Disease. You can find them on Facebook, UAID at UIUC. And so how long have you been involved with this organization?
Just over a month. So they had a call out meeting to get new members in, and I applied for a position, was lucky enough to get it.
Cool. And what is that position?
So I'm the director of events. And one of the things I have on my plate right now is that we're trying to provide free HIV testing
for
a clinic down the street, the Phoenix Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things is you have to go through a 5-hour program through the CDC. And lucky enough, it's free.
Yeah.
But you have to be some sort of qualification. So you know, we're trying to get partnership with the Phoenix Clinic in a non-clinical setting, like a non-hospital setting,
mm-hmm.
in order to be a community outreach member. And then the CDC will give us the go-ahead on taking that 5-hour course, and then we can get rapid HIV testing, get people in our organization to take the course, and, you know, administer it ourselves.
So you guys would actually be doing the testing?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really cool. And so is that something that, kind of with your biochemistry background, you feel a little more confident in? Or is that something that you know, is there some type of qualification that you have for that beforehand? Or is that just something that you're diving into just out of the blue?
You know, I'd like to say that I have some sort of understanding, but I think that it's all in the technique when you're doing testing. And I, as a student, I don't really have any physician experience. But, you know, the testing seems easy enough. They have a couple different types, you know, like oral swabs, which is just making sure that's not contaminated, but they also have like intravenous testing where you draw blood, and I'm sure that's a more rigorous qualification.
Sure. So we were talking about inequality versus inequity, and so I was wondering how the United States healthcare system and how maybe the Affordable Care Act, was that a good system in terms of inequity, helping with inequity? And then we have I don't know if you've gotten to see what the Republicans are trying to do. There hasn't been too many details
but
yeah. So maybe you could talk about the Affordable Care Act, what it provided in terms of helping inequity, and maybe some ways it failed in helping with inequity.
Yeah. So I think it did a really good job with providing health care to people with pre-existing conditions. One of the big things was that if someone had a condition that they had extremely high premiums for, the Affordable Care Act said you can't overcharge that person just because of the way they are. And that helped out a lot of people. However, that cost always gets shifted somewhere in the private industry. So if someone wants to keep their same doctor and they have this pre-existing condition, if they want to make profits that quarter, then they're going to have to push that cost to someone else. And while their premiums didn't get raised, the general premiums on everyone else's plans got raised. So that was a problem that the Affordable Care Act experienced. And, you know, this all comes with time. You know, that's what the repeal and the replace. We're not trying to repeal and replace. We're trying to improve. And what a big problem with it was they had cutoff lines for poverty levels on how well you could be subsidized for the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
So say like you're 400% below the poverty line. If you were 399, you didn't get the same subsidy. And, you know, you have to get You have to make it linear, basically. You can't just have $399 versus $401. How do you quantify that difference, you know?
Yeah. And so a big part of the shifting of the cost, that was supposed to be helped by bringing all these younger people and healthier people. And that's what the mandate did, was that it brought everyone into this pool. So you would have a lot of healthy people that would be low cost, and they would help offset the cost of the people with the pre-existing condition. And then that was a way to find affordable health care for everyone. And so is that kind of what the inequity versus equality, maybe a little more fair by nature, but inequity kind of making it fair as a structure? Is that what you're going for there?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. And so United Against Inequities in Disease, does the organization have a stance on, you said that instead of repealing and replacing, you were going for improving the Affordable Care Act. Also, what about a single payer option or Medicare for all? Have you guys thought about that?
Yeah, so personally, I'm a big fan of a single payer system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be the most effective and most realistic long term. You know, but you know, under the administration that we have, you kind of have to be flexible. And I think we really need to push for a realistic option for this administration that's improving the Affordable Care Act. Even if it slaps on a new name and it's still the same thing, that's fine by me, as long as it keeps the clauses that have helped Americans.
And so what are some ways that the Affordable Care Act could be improved?
So like I was saying with the 400% cutoff line, you know, if someone's at 380% under the poverty level, their lives are going to be very similar to someone that's 400% behind the poverty level. So you need to have a system that judges you on your subsidy based on a linear ratio. And that's just saying that, you know, your amount of the amount that you get subsidized is proportional to your poverty level. And it's not just you're 300 to 400, so you get this. You're 400 to 500,
right,
you get this. You know, you want to make sure that's fair.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so that's part of the battling of inequity that you guys are always talking about. So do you have any lectures or anything coming up in the near future that you would like to let people know about?
Yeah, this Monday at 7 p.m., actually, Dr. Margarita is giving us a lecture on childhood obesity, and that's going to be in the Chemical and Life Science Building, room 124.
Cool. Yeah, so if you're ever, you know, by campus, on campus, 7 p.m. this Monday, the Chemical and Life Science Building.
Yep.
Room 124. And I need to get those up on our PSA calendar here at WEFT so we can start announcing those, because they sound like fantastic events that really benefit the community. So I'm excited to have United Against Inequities in Disease in the community. I think that you guys are going to be doing great things, especially now that we have all this conversation going on around healthcare. So
yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, so thanks for coming in, Nick, and you know, maybe we'll have you in some other time, maybe promote some lectures, some stuff that you guys are doing in the community.
Heck yeah.
I hope that you guys get what you need to get to start providing free HIV tests. I think that would be a really cool thing.
That's the goal.
We just spoke with Nick Ferrari of United Against Inequities in Disease at UIUC. You can find them on Facebook. Right now, we have two members of the UIUC organization, Crescendo. Are you guys like an official RSO or anything like that?
Yes, we are.
Cool, cool. And would you like to just introduce yourselves?
I'm Jonathan Cortez. I am the treasurer of the RSO Crescendo.
And I am Deborah Waters, and I am the president of Crescendo.
Well, thank you both for coming into the WEFT studios and giving a little chat to me today. So Crescendo, I understand, is an organization to support incoming underrepresented students in the School of Music. And so what type of things do y'all do to complete that mission?
Well, we just started our RSO this year.
Oh, cool.
Last semester. So mm-hmm. It's fairly new, very much in the works, just a little baby organization. But we have a few ideas on going on like tours in inner city Chicago schools to help minority students realize that music can be a career for them in the future.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've also like switched up our mission statement a little bit more recently. We're kind of more of an organization. We say we're an organization where social justice and music intersect.
Oh, sweet.
So our focus is basically music, performing arts, and social justice. Our goal is to support underrepresented students in the School of Music, so incoming and current students and potentially students from the past. And yeah, we volunteer in local schools last semester. We engage our peers in conversations about social justice and music education, and we're always looking for volunteer opportunities. Right now, we're trying to see if we can partner up with a local library or retirement home, do performances, or just do some community work.
That's awesome. So you have a band, an orchestra, a symphony that you can go around and perform with?
Well, we have, since our membership is mainly students from the School of Music, we have just a variety of instruments and singers who've just been studying for the past 2 to 4 years here.
Yeah.
And it's just like just a bunch of different instruments.
Cool. And when you say underrepresented, who exactly are you talking about? I'm sure that's a large umbrella that encompasses a lot of people, but what are some of the groups out there you're looking to make contact with?
So we consider underrepresented students as anyone who comes from a religious, racial, or ethnic minority, students from lower socioeconomic statuses, LGBT plus students, and students with cognitive, emotional, or physical disabilities.
Awesome. Well, I think that's really cool. Was there a need out there? How did this group get started? What was the motivation behind the formation of Crescendo?
If I jog Deborah's memory, I'm pretty sure it had something to do with the statement that NAFME came out with, right?
Yes. Not to say too much, like, negative about anyone else, but basically an implied statement may or may not have been said by a CEO that Black students don't pursue music in college because music theory is too hard for them.
Oh my goodness.
And that also raised a lot of feelings. It resonated with students of color in our department because we always feel like we're kind of the outsider. Like it is a predominantly white study, and it's a predominantly high middle class, high income major. And we're just trying to find our place and give everyone else who's looking for a place with us as well.
Well, that's really beautiful. I'm really happy to have all of you in the community and have this group in the community. And something that you're doing in the community pretty recently on March 14th, Tuesday, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the main quad on the UIUC campus, you're going to be having your first fundraiser. So do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Well, we started the fundraiser in a response to the affirmative action bake sale that has also gotten a lot of traction or attention. And we started this as a response to it just to clarify some things on what affirmative action actually is and just give a little positive spin on it because, you know, how they worded their event was just, it was almost attacking students of minorities all over the campus.
It definitely, from what I've seen about it, I don't encourage anyone to go look up anything about it, but it seemed mainly like agitation. I actually reached out to them and asked if they would like to say anything about it, and then after I looked a little bit more into their organization, they seemed just like a bunch of trolls, and so I quickly decided not to communicate with them any further. And it was the day after that I saw Crescendo was holding a bake sale, and I was like, I would much rather talk about that. It seems like Crescendo is going for a lot more inclusivity and, accepting of everyone. And so what are some of the things about affirmative action that intersect with what Crescendo is doing? Is affirmative action and Crescendo kind of two means to the same goal a little bit?
What do you think?
Personally, affirmative action more has to do with, I guess, admissions standards of like who they're going to let in and who they're going to not, like who are they going to consider and who are they going to put on the wait list. Mm-hmm. And that really isn't what we're doing right now. Right now, we're dealing with students who are already within the university population. Sure. And hopefully we want to help with recruitment in public schools, because another issue we found out that underrepresented students often had was they were unaware or they didn't have the audition or application materials.
Right.
Yeah. So that's another issue we want to fix. But right now we're just focusing on students that are already within the university population.
And so at this this bake sale on Tuesday, March 14th, are you looking for any more donations? Do you still need more cookies, more muffins, anything like that from the community? Would any of that be a help for you guys?
You know what? We've gotten a bunch of community outreach in donations for baked goods and stuff, and we're very grateful for that. We've also got a co-sponsor with us, the University. Okay. We've also got a co-sponsor with us.
Well, great. I'm glad that somebody's co-sponsoring you.
Yeah.
Also, right now, monetary donations would be super helpful just in helping us complete our mission and also getting more goods for the fundraiser. So can we talk early?
Yeah, talk, yeah.
If Give anyone is interested, if they could send us a little bit of cash through paypal.me/crescendoUIUC. We also have a GoFundMe, gofundme.com/IamNotAQuota -crescendo-UIUC. And we also have our scholarship fund, crescendouiucarts.raisley.com.
And you can find all that information on our Facebook page and the event, I Am Not a Quota Bake Sale, and our Facebook page is Crescendo Community.
And so I Am Not a Quota, that is a hashtag that y'all are using in conjunction with this bake sale. What's the story behind that hashtag? What does that really mean?
I Am Not a Quota is, like we said, is a response to the affirmative action bake sale, yeah, which was implying that to us, some students' achievements weren't as good as other students' achievements who might not have gotten. And our response to that is everyone who is here worked really hard to be here. Like, we're all top-notch students. That's why we go to U of I. Like, they don't pick anyone less than the best. And we want to make sure that all students on campus know they're the best. Because we have gotten messages to our Facebook page from people who said they are really moved by this, because that's always been a question that they've had in their heart. Like, am I really the best candidate? Am I really supposed to be here? Or is, like, am I just here because I'm a person of color, or because I'm a person with a disability, or because I'm a woman? And we want to say, no, you're here because you worked for it. Like, you slayed high school and now you're here. Continue to slay.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So I'm speaking with Crescendo, which is a student organization from UIUC. And on Tuesday, March 14th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the main quad on campus, they are going to be holding an I Am Not a Quota bake sale. You're actually going to have a whiteboard there, and you're going to allow people to have their photo taken with the I Am Not a Quota on the whiteboard. Whose idea was that? And what do you hope to accomplish through that?
It was kind of my idea, but we've saw that the affirmative action bake sale has actually happened on other campuses besides ours, and we haven't really seen anyone else's responses. We are hoping that our hashtag could create more positive responses when this happens in the future. So if someone sees us do I Am Not a Quota, and they hopefully will use it in the future.
Yeah, yeah, I have heard of these affirmative action bake sales before, but I have not heard of an I Am Not a Quota bake sale before. So thank you and your organization for putting this on, for encouraging, you know, just less BS out there. So I'm really appreciative of all that. And so this is Crescendo, that's C-R-E-S-C-E-N-D-O. E-S-C-E-N-D-O. I don't know if I'm just not very good at spelling or if other people, I figured that people might help want help getting all that out there. But yeah, they're going to have a bake sale and it's going to be really cool. And use the I am not a quota hashtag. Let's get it going viral. Let's get this going across the country. Every time there's an affirmative action bake sale, there should be an I am not a quota bake sale that's bigger and better and more fun because, yeah, just more inclusive. And so Crescendo, what are, I understand you're a new organization. What are your hopes for the future? What do you hope to do with maybe some of the funds that you get out of this bake sale?
Well, we have a few funds set up. One of them is our recruitment tour, which was the going around inner city Chicago mm-hmm. to, you know, promote that music education and music performance is a real career choice that students can make. Another one is our scholarship type fund, which is just...
We are trying to provide a scholarship to a few students, depending on how much money we get in the fund. The scholarship would be for the like unseen cost of studying performing arts. So things like keeping ballet, tap shoes, renting music, keeping up your instrument, things like that, that we can't really use our tuition fees to cover, but still are like essential to us being successful in our majors.
Well, that's really cool. So the community can help Crescendo to help others by going to this bake sale or by, you know, going to the Facebook, finding all the links to donate and to help out. And I want to just thank both of you for coming in here, for spreading some positivity. I think that this is going to be a really great event, and I really appreciate both of your times. So
yeah,
thank you
so much for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
For the past week, the Native American House on the University of Illinois campus has been giving out free Illinois t-shirts in exchange for unofficial St. Patrick's Day shirts that feature chief imagery. Unofficial is an event that involves heavy drinking and celebration on campus. The day is loosely associated with St. Patrick's Day, and students typically wear green t-shirts, often featuring depictions of the university's ex-mascot, the chief. The event this year took place last Friday, March 3rd. The Native American and Indigenous Student Organization, or NASO, is co-sponsoring the t-shirt exchange with the Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Relations on the University of Illinois campus. Andre Silva is a sophomore at the University of Illinois and is a member of NASO. Silva created the flyer advertising the event and is pleased with the reception that it is receiving, especially on social media. According to Silva, just one day into the event, the poster he created had an audience of 19,000 on Facebook and had over 150 shares. Silva says that no matter what people say about the event, just having them talking about these issues is a step in the right direction.
I really don't mind like good feedback. I really don't mind bad feedback because as long as if it gets like publicity, good publicity or bad publicity, it's still publicity. As long as we're getting our message out there, that's what we want.
Despite generally positive feedback, Silva has noticed that some people have decided to take down the posters he put up across campus.
I know there's like people that like really are still hardcore like pro chief and everything, so they take them down because they don't want like the opposition. They don't want anybody against their views to be seen, so that's why they take it down to try to silence like our voice.
Even though this has been frustrating for him, Silva says that he will continue to put the posters up because he believes that these issues are important.
People say like, oh, we can put Native Americans on shirts and be okay with it. Next, you know, you're going to see like other images and then like of other cultures. And it's just like, it's not okay. None of this should be okay.
Silva also recognizes that it may be intimidating to come into the Native American House to exchange these shirts, but that people should not be afraid.
These shirts are oppressing like Native American culture, and to come to the Native American House and to trade in the shirts, it takes a lot of courage. And like we, as people that come in to do this, we respect that because we respect that you actually have the courage to come in and trade in the shirts, and we'll give you the Illinois shirt.
He also stressed the importance of standing up for other cultures and preventing these, quote, hateful images.
Like, if you don't have love for your own culture and if you don't have love for other cultures, that's how hate gets spread around.
The Native American House will be continuing with this event through tomorrow, Friday, March 10th, while supplies last.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to CU Progressive News. The views and opinions have been solely those of the speakers. The podcast is sponsored by Phoenix Botanical, providing exceptional service and quality medicine to those that can benefit from medical cannabis. PhoenixBotanical.net.
Thank you, Kevin Elliott, for the music.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 on the FM dial, streaming live at weft.org. You've been listening to this week's edition of CU Progressive News, and we'll be starting the Union Edge at straight up noon. I wanted to let you know that the Campus Faculty Association at the University of Illinois advocates for academic freedom, shared governance, and a strong faculty voice on campus. CFA is proud to support community radio, and they're also in support of strong unions. You can learn more about the CFA by visiting cfaillinois.org. Also, on April 7th from 6 to 9 p.m., WEFT will be holding a benefit art opening for the show entitled Chorus. This event will feature the music of local singer-songwriter, WEFT DJ, and Suna Songs recording artist Kevin Elliott. The art will remain on display through Sunday as part of the Boneyard Arts Festival. For this unique endeavor, WEFT distributed vintage sheet music to local artists to create art in any medium. All proceeds from purchase pieces will go to support your community radio station. Join us for music and art on Friday, April 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the WEFT Studios at 113 North Market Street in downtown Champaign. And now, this week's edition of The Union Edge.